सत्यम अर्जुन स्यादम कौरवं गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम बैक टू आवर भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी कंप्लीटेड द फोर्थ चैप्टर वाज ट्रांसेंडेंटल नॉलेज। दिस चैप्टर ऑन टाइटल ज्ञाना इज sandwiched between two chapters on Karma Yoga. Prabhupada titled chapter 3 as Karma Yoga and chapter 5 as Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Conventionally, the fifth chapter titled as Karma, Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. It is called as Karma Sannyasa Yoga. And fourth is titled as Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. So, Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga means by Jnana, one understands how one can actually practice karma in such a way that one does the fruit, one does renunciation within karma. So it is not about per se sannyas, but it is about sannyas in karma, not sannyas of karma. So that jnana we acquire in the fourth chapter, and practically how do we do it, that we will learn in the fifth chapter. So the karma sannyasa yoga doesn't mean sannyas of karma, it means sannyas in karma. So, Krishna is going to talk about this essential principle of not renunciation of action, but renunciation in action in the fifth chapter. And the whole theme of the Bhagavad Gita is that action itself can lead one to disentanglement and liberation if that action is done intelligently. So, that we will discuss in the fifth chapter now. The fourth chapter concluded with Krishna telling Arjuna, Atishto Tishta Bharata, rise and fight. The fifth chapter begins with Arjuna having a doubt. Arjuna's doubt comes because prior to that, in 39 Krishna has talked about Shanti, and in 41 Krishna has talked about Karma Sannyas. So both these to get coupled with the non-reference to fighting in the entire fourth chapter make Arjuna doubt whether Krishna really wanted Arjuna to fight or not. So the last instruction, Atishto Tishta, seems to be contrary to the tenor, the tone, the mood of what he has spoken, what Krishna has spoken earlier. That creates a doubt in Arjuna's mind, and Arjuna asks a question. So in principle, Arjuna's question is similar to his question in the third chapter. So some chapters in the Bhagavad Gita are similar, third and fifth are similar. It says we'll see seventh and ninth are also similar. So although they're similar, their themes are similar, Krishna, whenever he has to discuss similar themes also, when he's discussing second time, he takes the concepts deeper. He gives us deeper understanding of the concept. So we'll see how that happens in this particular chapter. So let's look at the fifth chapter. Before we go start reciting the verse, let's look at the overview of the chapter. So we can divide this into three broad sections. So the first section is Karma Yoga is equal to but easier than Jnana Yoga. They are equal. Both will give the same result, but Karma Yoga is preferable because it is easier. Then 7 to 16 talks about by fixing mind on Atma, Karma Yogi remains free from bondage. This is an elaboration of the theme of the first six verses. How is Karma Yoga equal? Somebody said Karma Yoga, karma causes bondage and renunciation leads to liberation. So Krishna is telling that I know if one is not fixing the mind on sense objects, instead one is fixing the mind on the soul, then the Karma Yogi will remain free from bondage. And after that, you can say that fixing the mind on the super soul, on the Paramatma, at 17 to 29, the Karma Yogi will attain liberation. So there are two phases. One is not getting bound further, and second is getting liberated. Just like we may say that when we are sick, one part of recovery is to remove the sickness, remove the infections, the germs that have caused the sickness, and the second is to regain the strength. So first part is to prevent the aggravation of the sickness, whatever the infection, they should not spread further, and second part is to ensure that one removes the sickness and then one regains the health also, whichever way we look at it. The point is recovery involves these two parts: remove the negative, stop the negative, and then bring out the positive. So, Atma Gyan can help one to prevent further, to acting in a way that leads to further bondage. And Paramatma Gyan, knowledge of the Super Soul, knowledge of the Supreme, will lead to liberation. And in 29, and that last section 27, 28 to 29, actually Karma Yoga will eventually lead to some form of renunciation. But Krishna doesn't recommend Gyan Yoga over here. He will recommend Ashtanga Yoga. That is talked about 20 verses 27 to 28. And that will be elaborated in chapter 6. And verse 29 talks about Bhakti Yoga, which will be elaborated in chapters 7 to 12. So let's look at the first verse of the 5th chapter now. Arjuna Vacha Sanyasam Karmanam Krishna Punar Yogam Cha Samshasi Yashreya Etayo Rekam Tanme Bruhi Sunishchitam. So Sanyasam Karmanam Krishna, that sannyasa, when somebody wants to do like sannyasa, sannyasam karmanam krishna, when one takes sannyas at the end, one does karma accordingly. So Krishna is telling here that you have recommended karma sannyas, that is referring to verse 10.49, sannyasam karmanam krishna. But then in 10.42 you said punar yogam cha samsadhi, yogam atishto tishte paranta, equipped with yoga, rise and fight. So yachhreya etayorekam, among these please tell me one that which is shreya, that which is long term. So Krishna has persistently been asked by Arjuna, please tell me what is shreya. And tanme bruhi is, I ask you now, please tell me sunishchitam. This is a question that has been going on. But now tell me definitely, sunishchit. Nishchit is itself is definitely. Sunishchit is with absolute definiteness, with conclusive definiteness. Please tell me what I should do. So now, to this question, Krishna will reply. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Sanyasa Karma Yogascha Nishreyasa Karavubhav Tayostu Karma Sanyasat Karma Yoga Vishishyate. So sannyasah karma yogascha nishreyasa. So Arjuna had asked, what is shreya? So Krishna is telling that ubhav, both of them are shreya. Both of them will lead to nishreyas. Nishreyas means long term benefit. Both of them will lead to long term benefit. Sannyasa karma yogascha. But among those two, tayostu karma sannyasat, among those two, karma yoga vishishyate. Karma yoga is better. So now, the point of the Bhagavad Gita is that one should ensure that one doesn't become bound in material stay bound in material existence. So now, what causes bondage is attachment. And to the extent one doesn't have attachment, to that extent there is no bondage. So now Krishna is going to say that actually both Karma Yoga and Karma Sannyas, both they prevent attachment. So in that sense, both are good. But among the two, Krishna says Karma Yoga is better. Why is that better? Because that is more easier. So now Srila Prabhupada doesn't focus so much on the comparative virtue of Karma Yoga or Karma Sannyas in this purport. He focuses more on the point that we shouldn't get bound, that staying free from bondage is fundamentally important, and nishreyasa karavubhav, therefore one should avoid karmic bondage. And Prabhupada quotes a series of verses from the teachings of King Rishabh Dev in 5th canto, 5th chapter, which essentially underscore how the conditioned soul becomes bound and how we should stay free from bondage. Let's look at the verses. So, 5.5.4-6. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma idindriya pritaya aparanoti Sadhumanyetatmanoyam asanapi kleshada asadeha. So noonam pramatta. Pramatta means mad. Intoxicated with madness. Pramatta can mean intoxicated, can be mad. So kurute vikarma. Such a person does vikarma. And what is vikarma? Indriya pritaya aprinoti. When one acts for sense gratification, one acts for indriya priti. So one should not act like that. Sadhumanyet. This is not good. With atmanoyam. Why is it not good? By that, ayam, by the soul will get another body. Asan apiklesha asadeha. So, what will happen is one will continue in the cycle of birth and death, and asan, the body is temporary, but along with temporary is kleshada, it gives misery. Asanapi kleshada asadeha. So we already have a miserable body, and if we act for sense gratification, then we show material nature that I want to enjoy the sense objects. So then we will get another material body, but the material body is subject to so many miseries. So we'll get all those miseries also. The material body gives us insignificant pleasure and significant pain. It gives insignificant pleasure. The pleasure lasts for a few moments, but it gives significant pain. Actually, the pain sometimes lasts for hours, months, years sometimes when a person gets terrible diseases. So, asanapi kleshada asadeha. So, it is kleshada. It is not sukhada. The body is kleshada. Now, how long will a person continue like this? Parabhavastavada bhogya jato yavanna jigyasata atma tattvam yavat kriyastavad idam manovai karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. So parabhavastavad, so till that time there will be parabhav, till when? Abodha jato, as long as a person remains ignorant. Abodha, bodha means knowledge, abodha means no knowledge. And so as long as the person is ignorant, a person will stay, will have parabhava. Parabhava is failure. So why? Because yavanna jigyasata atma tattvam. As long as one doesn't inquire about the soul, then there is some default activity which all of us have to do. So if we don't know about spiritual activity, by default we'll do material activity. As long as there's no spiritual inquiry, then by default, yavat kriyastava idam manovai. So the mind will be involved in kriya. What kind of kriya? Karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. One will act for karma. And one acts for fruitive activity. Sharira bandha. One will become bound to the body. So actually, the soul and the body are separate. Just like we give the example of the car and the driver. The car and the driver are two distinct things. The driver can go out of the car and driver can walk somewhere else also. Or can take some other car. Or can reach home and may not need a car. Whatever way. So the two are different, but the soul and body are for all practical purposes identical now. We don't think of us as a soul. For us, a soul is some theoretical concept. Okay, Gita says I'm not the body and the soul. I also intellectually understand it. But for all practical purposes, the soul has become melded into the body right now. Not in terms of identity. The soul is always separate. But practically means, from our experiential perspective right now, it's very difficult to understand the soul is different from the body. Why? That's because of the enjoying mentality. The enjoying mentality welds the soul to the body. Now, the welding, when it happens, two material come together and they get heated and tied together. Soul is actually different from the body, but the soul has become welded and melded to the body because of the desire to enjoy the body. So, sharira bandhaha. So, one becomes bound by the desire to enjoy the sense objects. The desire to engage in fruitive activity by which one can get sense gratification. So sense gratification and fruitive activity, both of them bind the soul. Now what is the difference between the two? Both are in one sense similar, but sense gratification is directly acting to gratify the senses. So I may eat something, I may touch something, I may enjoy something. That is sense gratification. Fruitive activity is the activity that leads to sense gratification. So for example, somebody may do some karma kanda rituals by which one may later get sense gratification. So, or we may do many other activities which will also lead to sense gratification. The fruitive activity is that. Now, after that Krishna describes karma, this Rishabhdeva describes here, evam manaha karma vasham prayunkte avidyatmanya upadhiyamane preetirnayavan mai vasudeve namuchyate deha yogena tavat. So, evam manaha karma vasham prayunkte. So the mind will be in karma vasha, under the vasha. Vasha means control of karma. And avidyatma, avidya, avidyaya atmanya upadhiyamane. One will be controlled by avidya about the atma tattva, about spiritual reality. How long? Preetirnayavan mai vasudeve. Till one does not develop priti for Lord Vasudev. And then namuchyate deha yogena tavat. The contact of the soul with the body we use the word yoga to refer to connection or contact. So we want karma yoga, bhakti yoga. But here the word curiously is used, deha yoga. The soul has become bound to the body. The soul has become bound to the body. At that time, namuchyate. So that bond, that contact, that bondage of the soul to the body, namuchyate. One will not become free from that till priti nayavan mai vasudeve. But till one has not developed affection to Lord Vasudev. What happens when we develop affection to Lord Vasudev? Then the mind is no longer filled with the enjoying mentality. And the enjoying mentality is what binds the soul to the body. So that's how, by developing affection for Lord Vasudev, we become free from the enjoying mentality and we become free from material bondage thereof. So Prabhupada's whole purport focuses on this point of staying free from bondage. That's the first point. Then, Prabhupada writes that significant statement over here. Jnana or knowledge that one is not this material body but spirit soul is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spiritual soul, spirit soul. Otherwise, there is no escape from material bondage. So, it's not enough to know, it's enough to, what is required is also to act. So, therefore, when we act, then there is liberation by that. So, now Prabhupada explains that acting on the spiritual platform is practicing devotional service. And we discussed this this Bhakti Samas in the verse of how renouncing that which is can be used in Krishna's service is not renunciation. That is actually false renunciation. That is Falgu Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya is to renounce the enjoying mentality and to use the things in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada makes the point also, which he would often speak, that actually nothing belongs to us. So, what is there actually to renounce? Everything, even our body belongs to Krishna, because it belongs to Krishna. So, therefore, the only thing for us to renounce is the illusion that we have anything to renounce. Actually, nothing belongs to us. Everything belongs to Krishna. And the only thing to renounce is the illusion that we have anything to renounce. So, that is the illusion that, okay, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. And when we become free from that illusion, when we renounce that illusion, then we understand, rather than things being mine, I am Krishna's. I am Krishna's. When I understand I am Krishna's, then, and Krishna is mine. Amito tomara, tumito amara, ki kaje, aparidhana. What else do I need, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says? I am yours and you are mine. That's all that is important, matters. So, in this way, one makes steady spiritual advancement. See, Prabhupada's point in the purport is, we don't have to renounce action, we don't have to renounce possession, we have to renounce the misconception that we are the enjoyers. We are cooperators. When Krishna enjoys, then we also enjoy as his subordinate enjoyers. Now, Krishna continues this. So, he is saying that karma yoga is better. Now, why karma yoga is better? He'll explain the next verses now. So, one should know, such a person is nitya sannyasi, such a person is a constant renunciate. Who is? Yonadveshti na kaangshati. Such a person neither resents nor hankers. What does the person know? Nirdvando hi mahabaho. Without duality, the person acts and Sukham bandhat pramuchyate. A person will happily become free from bondage. So here Krishna is talking about renunciation in action instead of renunciation of action. Renunciation in action, he says, is that we act dveshyati na kaangshati. One doesn't hanker, one doesn't resent. Hanker means, oh, I want that, I want that. And resent means, why I got this, why I got this, I don't want this, why I got this, like that. Hanker and resent. Na dveshti na kaangshati. Nirdvando. In this way one stays free from duality. So how will this happen? When internally one doesn't have attachment. So that detachment, at this stage Krishna is talking, by the not Atma Jnana. Later on in the Bhagavad Gita thought flow process, that will come by Bhagavad Jnana. When we are attached to Krishna and want to please Krishna, then that attachment and aversion will go away. And Krishna says, in this way, Sukham Bandhat. How Sukham Bandhat? Because activity is natural for us. And giving up activity is unnatural. So because activity is natural, therefore it is much easier to do activity and stay free from bondage rather than to do inactivity and seek freedom from bondage. So externally, inactivity seems very simple, very easy. I just sit and do nothing. But internally, inactivity is very difficult because there is so much passion in the body, and the passion makes, I want to go here, I want to see this, I want to do that. And that will make us go round and round and round. It will not allow us to stay peaceful. So externally, inactivity may seem easy, but internally it is difficult. And externally, activity may seem difficult, but internally, activity is easy. It's according to our nature, not just our conditioned nature, but also our eternal nature. As souls also, we are active in service to Krishna. Therefore, sukham bandhat pramuchyate, sukham bandhat. Happily one will become free from bondage. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that a devotee is always liberated because a devotee acts always for the pleasure of Krishna. There is no duality in the mind because whatever he does for Krishna. Being thus freed from the platform of duality, he is liberated even in this material world. So how does doing everything for Krishna keep one free from duality? Because a devotee doesn't think in terms of, oh, this is good, this is bad. From material terms, a devotee simply thinks, I want to serve Krishna. Whatever comes in my life, I will see how it can be used to serve Krishna, how it can be tapped as an opportunity for service to Krishna. And because service to Krishna can be performed in all situations, of course, the form of service may change, but the idea that I am the servant of Krishna, that can be sustained in all situations. That's how a devotee stays liberated from the circumstances. Now, Krishna will clarify this further, this point of how one can stay free from bondage. Sankhya yoga prithak balaha pravadanti na panditaha ekam api astita samyak ubhayor vindate phalam. So Sankhya yoga. So here Krishna is saying that Sankhya refers to the process of jnana, the process involving inaction. And yoga refers to the process involving action. So going back to 5.2, Sankhya refers to karma sannyas. And yoga refers to karma yoga. So that these two are separate. The people who think this are balaha. Balaha are childish or ignorant or less intelligent. And he says, as contrary to balaha, there are panditaha. Pravadanti na panditaha. So the wise people do not say that two are different. They are, Krishna, how are they same? Because he says that ekam api astitaha samyak. If one becomes situated in one of them, then ubhayor vindate palam. One gets the fruits of both of them. So ekam api astitaha samyak. Situate yourself in one of those, one will get the fruits of both. Indate phalam, both fruits will get. So Krishna is saying that both are similar, both are not different, undifferent, because their ultimate goal is the same. And that he'll make more explicitly clear in the next verse. So I'll explain both the verses together. Yat sankhyai prapyate sthanam, tad yogair api gamyate, ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha, yah pashyati sa pashyati. Yet Sankhyai, that which is obtained through Sankhya, that is that obtained through karma sannyas, prapyate sthanam, the sthana, the destination that is obtained, tad yogair api gamyate, that one attains by the practice of yoga also. And understanding this, ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha, when one sees Sankhya and yoga both to be equal, yah pashyati, one who sees like this, sa pashyati, one who sees thus is the actual seer. Is the actual seer. Yah pashyati sa pashyati. So there is diversity in paths, but there is uniformity in goal. There is diversity in paths, but there is uniformity in goal. Now Krishna, these verses are no way supporting the idea that all paths lead to the same goal. Krishna is talking about two specific paths over here. The path of intellectual introspection and inaction, and the path of inaction based on Jnana Yoga, and the path of action based on Karma Yoga. I think both these two lead to the same goal, not that all paths lead to the same goal. That is not a Gita teaching at all. In fact, that is not a logical teaching also, leave alone a scriptural teaching. So That was what we already discussed in 4.11. Here Krishna is talking something different. He is taking two specific paths. And the goal of both these paths is to ultimately free us from bondage. And he is saying that both these paths can free one from bondage. But the vital point is, when will they free us from bondage? When they are done with detachment. So, whether one has authentic detachment and renounces the world, renouncing all the activity and renouncing all involvement in the world, or one has detachment and one lives and acts in the world. If one has detachment, in both cases, one will be able to attain freedom from bondage. But actually, he says, while doing activity, because doing activity is natural for us, so detachment while doing activity is easier to do than detachment while giving up activity entirely, because giving up activity is unnatural. So, but here Krishna is not talking about the difference. Now, he already said that this is better. Which is better? Karma Yoga is better. But now he is saying both of them are the same. Both of them ultimately lead to the same goal. That is, destination is obtained by Sankhya, that destination is also obtained by Yoga. And therefore, Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha. So now, how does this work out? And do both lead to the same destination? See, normally there is a hierarchy. There is Karma Yoga, then there is Jnana Yoga, and there is Bhakti Yoga. So, Karma Yoga is higher than Jnana Yoga. Karma Yoga is lower and Jnana Yoga is higher. But when Jnana Yoga is higher, why is Krishna saying that the two are not different? The two, both are ultimately similar. They are Ekam. How are they Ekam? Because both are meant to take one towards the same goal. So, the Karma Yogi is also ultimately aiming for liberation. The Jnana Yogi is also ultimately aiming for liberation. And by practicing Karma Yoga also one can attain liberation. By practicing Jnana Yoga also one can attain liberation. So, in terms of the goal, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga are similar. So, now Krishna is doing something significant. If you remember the flow of the third chapter, in third chapter, if you remember, the flow was like a spiral. So, Krishna is telling that you practice Karma Yoga because that's what you are qualified for. And even if you think you are qualified for Jnana Yoga, still practice Karma Yoga because you set a good example by that. So there, in that discussion, Krishna had allowed the notion to continue that Jnana Yoga is higher and Karma Yoga is lower. But there he was saying that Jnana Yoga, you are not qualified, so don't practice it. It may be higher, but don't practice it. By that, by practicing, you will become Mithyachari. But here Krishna is taking the discussion to a deeper level and he is saying that actually Jnana Yoga is not higher. Yeah. In one sense, in the Yoga ladder, it may be higher. But it's not that Jnana Yoga will lead to a higher destination. Actually, whatever destination is obtained by Jnana Yoga, that can be attained even by Karma Yoga. Ultimately, both are meant to bring about liberation. So, Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha. One who sees that both of them are one, in the sense that they both lead to the same goal, that is, that person is a true seer. So, this is a phrase, Yah Pashyati Sa Pashyati. This will come again in the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavatam also has another verse. It says, Pashyan, another verse conclusion often, which comes, Pashyan Apina Pashyati. So, these are very significant verses, which indicate something deep. So, Yah Pashyati Sa Pashyati means, that actually, one who sees like this is the true seer. So, Krishna is talking about seeing with knowledge. You know, if somebody gets a chest x-ray and shows it to a layman, oh, this is a black film with some image on it. And a doctor sees, you've got terrible TB. Your whole lungs is filled with lesions. What is this? So now, actually speaking, it is the same thing. But who is seeing it actually? The patient is seeing it. A layperson is seeing it. The doctor is seeing it. When the doctor sees, the doctor understands. Yah Pashyati Sa Pashyati. The lay person sees Pashyan Apina Pashyati. The lay person sees, but he sees but doesn't see because he doesn't understand. So we see with knowledge. We see with the pre-existing understanding that we have. So actually what we can know depends on what we know. What we can know depends on what we know. If somebody tells me if somebody tells an illiterate villager that damage to the medulla oblongata can be fatal. What is this medulla oblongata? Person has no reference to connect it with. You see, in the head, in the whole system of management of the brain, of the body, there is an organ below this, the head part, it's called the medulla oblongata. And that's a very important organ. And that is damaged, a person can die. Oh, die, a person can connect. And the brain, yes, brain also, even a later person has similar saying, the brain is important. So when whatever we hear, we have to be able to connect with something that we know. And then we integrate it into our conceptual framework. And then that expands our understanding. So what we can know depends on what we know. So if I don't know anything about X-ray, then I look at X-ray, nothing makes sense to me. But a doctor already knows something, and therefore, when the doctor sees actually and understands further. So what we can know depends on what we know. Therefore, if we just arbitrarily start studying scripture or quoting, there are people who just know some verses and they quote some verses from the scripture. See, I also know Bhagavad Gita. I also say I know this verse, I know that verse. Well, it's good that somebody has memorized Bhagavad Gita verse and is quoting that. That indicates one's piety. But just quoting standalone verses doesn't indicate a deep understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. All that it indicates is one has some official piety because of which one has memorized some Gita verses. So if you want to understand the Gita in its flow, in its integrity, then we have to study it systematically. So Krishna is telling over here, when we understand things properly, when we see things properly, then yaha pashyati sa pashyati. Then we actually see when we see. Otherwise, we don't see even if we see. So externally it appears as if a person who is doing karma yoga, a person engaged in the world. Externally it appears as if a person who is doing jnana yoga, a person who is renounced from the world, sitting in silent contemplation, grave, austere. Oh, this person is much more advanced. This person is not so advanced. That's what I think. But no, both are working toward the same destination. When we see the commonality of the destination, beyond the diversity of the process, then we understand that actually they are, then we actually become seers, then we truly understand. So, yaha pashyati sa pashyati. Now, Prabhupada explains in the purport that the real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Find the ultimate goal of life. So, what is the ultimate goal? It is Mate Viduhu Swartha Gatim Hi Vishnu. The Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto explains that Nate Viduhu, people don't know that the ultimate goal of life is Lord Vishnu. To know Lord Vishnu, to love Lord Vishnu, to serve Lord Vishnu. So, the Bhagavatam establishes that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the original manifestation of the Absolute Truth. But after that, the Bhagavatam uses the names Krishna and Vishnu as identical and interchangeable. So even in the Ras Leela, where there is no conception of Vishnu coming up, it's only Krishna. But at the end of the Ras Leela, it is said that one who hears these pastimes of Lord Vishnu. So, Vikriditam Yadrajubhir Idamcha Vishnu. So, why? Because the Bhagavatam, it makes it, the philosophical point, it makes it clear that, okay, Krishna is the Bhagavan Swayam. But after that, it doesn't go into do a hair-splitting analysis. It simply focuses on the point that Krishna and Vishnu, as names, are identical and interchangeable. So now Prabhupada explains that how are the two similar? Now suppose somebody wants to know how to nourish the tree. Suppose we find out, okay, some people try just watering the leaves. Oh, the tree looks very nicely watered. It may look nicely watered, but it will not be nourished. So somebody else may say, okay, this tree, it has its roots. Maybe something is there down. Then I start digging it carefully without damaging the roots, but I dig it and I reach. I see, oh, these roots are going down, down, down. They go till here. Now, after what? After that. So after I find the root, what I have to do is, I have to water the root. On the other hand, the other is somebody understands in faith. He has from authority that actually we have to water the root of the tree. The person starts watering the root. By watering the root, the tree starts growing. So both ways, essentially, what is happening is that one is going to water the tree, and when one waters the tree is going to grow. But the second process is easier. Karma Yoga Vishishyate, Krishna says. Why? Because one doesn't have to go through the laborious process of digging, and digging without damaging, digging the area around the tree's roots without damaging the roots, and then after digging also what we have to do is water only. So if you water initially itself, then that's much easier. So actually, even when it comes to one by philosophical analysis, so the body is like the tree, and below the body is something deeper, that is the soul. The soul is the root. So the soul is the essence of existence, and ultimately the soul comes from the super soul. So the super soul is the root of all roots. Krishna talks about himself as Bijam Avyam in the 7th chapter, the imperishable seed of all existence. So after one comes to know that I am not the body and the soul through the process of Sankhya, even after that, what does one have to do? One ultimately has to water the root of the tree. One has to act at the level of the soul, and that is perform devotional service ultimately. So if one can start off acting at the level of the soul right now by acting with detachment, then also one can make spiritual advancement. So now, for all practical purposes, Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, their main difference is the understanding of the absolute truth. The Karma Yogi may not know what is the absolute truth. There is some absolute truth, and I am not the body, I am the soul. I have to become detached from the body, and let me act in this mood of sacrifice, don't pander to the body. So Bhakti Yogi understands also that I am a part of God, Krishna. Krishna is the absolute truth, and I have to work not just in the mood of sacrifice, but in the mood of divine sacrifice, in the mood of sacrifice for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. When I act in this way, then I will become liberated. So actually both involve something similar, but Krishna says that the ultimate goal being similar, the two are similar, but there is a difference because one process is easier. So he will come back to the same point again. So Prabhupada concludes very nicely over here. So Prabhupada says, superficially, one in process appears to involve detachment, that is Jnana Yoga. Another process appears to involve attachment. But what is the difference? For one, there is detachment from matter, and that is detachment from matter is Jnana Yoga. And attachment to Krishna is Bhakti Yoga. Attachment to spirit in general will be Karma Yoga. Are one and the same. One who sees things, sees things as they are. Vatiya Pashyati Sapashyati. Now Krishna will continue this thread of thought, and he'll conclude this part by saying why Karma Yoga is better, or why Jnana Yoga is to be discouraged. Sanyasastu Mahabaho Dukkhamaptuma Yogataha Yoga Yukto Munir Brahma Achirena Adhivachyati. So Sanyasastu Mahabaho Sanyasastu Mahabaho means, O Arjuna, you are Mahabaho. This word has been used again in this chapter now. Earlier it was used, now it is being used again. Dukkham aptum ayogataha. When one does sannyas without doing yoga, that means one renounces action, ayogataha, then one gets dukkha. Why dukkha? Because inactivity is difficult, it is troublesome, it is unsustainable, it is unnatural. Yoga yukto munir brahma. On the other hand, if somebody is yoga yukta, such a muni, person engaged in activity, Brahma na chirena adigacchati. Such a person will attain Brahma. And when? Na chirena. Not after a long time. Chirena is a long time. Na chirena is not after a long time. Adigacchati. One will attain. One will attain soon. It will not take too much time. So Krishna is saying that, again he is reiterating, Sanyasastu Mahabaho Dukkham Aptum Ayogataha. Ayogata. If one is dispossessed of yoga, one doesn't have a connection with spirit, right? Connection with the absolute truth, then dukkham aptum. Because what is happening? One is detached from matter, so one is not getting into any bondage. But one is detached from matter, one is not getting any satisfaction, and one is not allowed to do any activity when one is detached from matter. Because any activity in the material realm causes bondage. So detachment from matter means staying in activity. So that is dukkham aptum. It's difficult to be inactive, it's difficult to be without pleasure. And because one is ayogataha, so one is not connected to the absolute truth, so one is not experiencing higher happiness. So it's neither here nor there. One is trying to come out of matter, but one is not entering into spirit. And in that situation, one is lost. Therefore, one is klesha. One gets klesha. Dukkham aptam yogata. Therefore, Krishna says, what one should do is, be yoga yukta. And by being yoga yukta, one will soon attain liberation. One will attain Brahma. So, Brahma is a generic word used for attaining the absolute truth. So, Prabhupada explains how this jnana is referring to the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, and how the Mayavadis have their own commentaries, but those commentaries do not give the ultimate conclusion. So, Prabhupada took the Mayavadi sannyasis and the Vaishnava sannyasis. The Mayavadi sannyasis engaged in studies of Sankhya and Vedanta speculation cannot release the transcendental service of the Lord. Because their studies become very tedious, they sometimes become tired of Brahman speculation, and thus they take shelter of the Bhagavatam without proper understanding. This is an interesting point. See, you know, if we look at the Vedas, at the Vedic history, now Shankaracharya did not comment on the Bhagavatam. Ramanujacharya also didn't comment on the Bhagavatam. Madhvacharya started commenting on it. He wrote a he commented on the Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Tatpar Nirnay, as he wrote Mahabharata Tatpar Nirnay. So, basically, the Bhagavatam is a profound philosophy which concludes in personalistic, theistic devotion. Shankaracharya did not mess with it, and because Ramacharya was primarily responding to Shankaracharya, so he also did not refer to the Bhagavatam. Although he quoted concepts of bhakti which are similar to what is given in the Bhagavatam. But to our context, what is important is Shankaracharya had appeared in the 7th century. So after him, Ramacharya came in the 10th century, the 10th, 11th century, then Madhvacharya in 11th, 12th century. And after that, in the medieval Indian history, there's a bhakti renaissance. Now bhakti was there long ago when, before 5000 years, when the Vedic culture was present in the world. But we are talking about recent history now. So when this bhakti renaissance started, the appeal of Mayavad started paling, started appearing stale as compared to bhakti. And ultimately the idea that I am Brahman, it may be relating to the ego, but it has no satisfaction to the heart. Just in the Mayavadi path idea, unless you renounce the world, you cannot even begin the spiritual journey seriously. Because if it's an illusion, you have to come out of illusion. So everybody has to take sannyas. So it's a very demanding path. And also, not only is demanding, it doesn't lead to the ultimate destination also actually. But what happened is, the Mayavadis, they found that they were not able to sustain themselves in their renounce path. And they were not able to sustain people's attention also. So within impersonalism, slowly, the bhakti cult, you could say, Prabhupada uses the word cult. We don't use the word cult generally because the word cult has got a very negative connotation. Cult conveys the idea of people who live in isolation and people who are brainwashed and they do all sorts of weird things. That's what we refer to by the word cult nowadays. Of course, during Prabhupada's times, the word cult was just a group. It referred to a group. So it had no negative connotation to it. Just objective meaning that was there, it meant a group. So we avoid the use of word cult, although Prabhupada does use it. Now, in our context, bhakti started spreading very rapidly. So the Mayavadis, among their wrongs also, some people started practicing bhakti. Not bhakti in the sense that they wanted to practice bhakti as the ultimate goal, but still they started practicing bhakti. And they also started studying Bhagavatam. And they also started teaching based on the Bhagavatam. For example, Madhusudana Saraswati was a prominent scholar in the Vedantic line, in the Advaitic line, and he wrote a commentary called he actually wrote many books. So, one of the books is Srimad Bhagavatam Pathama Shloka Tatpari. So, it's almost it's a book of dozens and dozens and dozens of pages. It's just the first shloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is extensive elaboration on it. So, in this way, the Bhagavatam is commented on by the Mayavadis, and nowadays many Mayavadis also do Bhagavad Saptah. But actually, they just can't they can't enter into the mystery of Bhagavatam. They try to interpret everything metaphorically. And then they feel almost embarrassed by Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. You know, this meant the absolute truth. Why is he acting immorally? And they try to explain away everything as symbolic or whatever. They say, what does the Rasalila represent? It represents the union of Radha and Krishna. It represents the merging of the soul with the absolute truth. Actually, this is not at all what the Bhagavatam is teaching. And this is quite offensive. But they even if they speak on the Bhagavatam, they cannot really relish the Bhagavatam. Because their underlying defining conceptions are all wrong. They are not studying the Bhagavatam to understand Bhagavan. They are studying Bhagavatam to transcend Bhagavan. To, in one sense, denigrate and destroy the form of Bhagavan and thereafter attain Brahman. So, that's why they cannot be satisfied. So, there is this strand of bhakti which is there among the impersonalists also. And somehow what has happened is that there are some bhaktas, some people who may have genuine bhakti also, but they get attracted to the Mayavadi path because they think those organizations are prominent, they are respectable in public size. They think, I want to practice spirituality, these people are doing bhakti, let me also do bhakti. So, we have to understand that not all people who are in Mayavadi organizations are necessarily Mayavadis. They are Mayavadis by affiliation, but they may not be Mayavadis by inclination. So, affiliation means that's what they are affiliated to, but by inclination, they may not be Mayavadis. So, Sridhar Swami was actually like that. Sridhar Swami is the seminal commentator on the Bhagavatam. There may have been commentators before him, but their commentaries are not available. Sridhar Swami's commentary is seminal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also referred to that commentary and glorified Sridhar Swami. Now, Sridhar Swami, if we see, he was not belonging to a Vaishnava Sampradaya, externally speaking. He was a devotee, exalted devotee, great Acharya. But he was externally belonging to the Mayavad Sampradaya. And that's why when he wrote his commentary, in some places, he gave certain understandings which seemed to support Mayavad. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Antalila, by the pastime of Vallabha Bhatta coming to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vallabha Bhatta tried to counter the conception that Sridhar Swami has given. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood the heart of Srimad Sridhar Swami. And he understood that actually whatever he has given is appropriate. He has given the highest devotional conclusions in the right places, and some other places there are certain statements which may lead to some misunderstanding. But when we understand the context and we understand the heart of Sridhar Swami, there is no mistake. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not approve of Vallabha Bhatta's attempts to counter and correct Sridhar Swami's commentary. But what was Vallabha Bhatta's objection? It was that, you know, everything is contextual in his commentary. Now, there is no consistency. So actually the consistency was there, but because of affiliation, he had to make certain statements. So Jiva Goswami, when he is writing his Sandarbhas, then he uses Sridhar Swami as the standard reference for commenting on the Bhagavatam. And he says, Tika Iti. So he will say that, okay, the Tika, he doesn't even mention who's Tika, because understood he is quoting Sridhar Swami's Tika. So when Sridhar Swami is making a point that supports personalism, Jiva Goswami just quotes it directly and then explains it. And when Sridhar Swami at certain places, because of the affiliation to impersonalism, has to give some impersonalist explanations, then what Jiva Goswami says is, he doesn't refer to Sridhar Swami at all, and he simply says that according to an imaginary interpretation, some people say it's like this, and he says, no, it's not like this. Actual understanding is this, and he gives logical and scriptural basis for his understanding also. So Jiva Goswami shows how Vaishnava etiquette is to maintain, something which Vallabha Bhatta could not do. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that, I don't want to hear this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised him quite a bit strongly at that time. So, even now, there may be some people who are impersonalists, but they are Mayavadis by affiliation. We shouldn't assume that those who are Mayavadis by affiliation necessarily have to be Mayavadis by inclination. So, there are people, if they get the proper understanding, they may turn away from Mayavad and come to the process of Bhakti Yoga, if they are given the right understanding. Now Krishna will talk about how one can be yoga yukta. Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vichitatma jitendriya sarvabhutatma bhutatma purvan apina lipyate yoga yukto. So yoga yukta was word used in the previous verse. So Krishna, when one is yoga yukta, one is vishuddhatma, the soul is purified. Vijitatma, so second atma refers to self-controlled. And jitendriya, one who has conquered senses. So one who is pure and one who controls his mind and senses. Sarva bhutatma bhutatma. This is an interesting compound word. Kurvan api nalipyate. Which a person, even as a person acts, does not get bound. So the prior qualifications are fine. Actually, in this fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the pastime of Maharaj Uttanapada, who was a descendant of Swayambhu Manu. He and his descendants, they keep ruling the earth. So he is described in the fourth canto. His description comes in Dhruva Maharaj pastime, the 7th, 8th, 9th chapters. And then his descendants keep ruling the world, but then his dynasty ends. So when his dynasty ends, the rule has to go on. So therefore, from Uttanapad, Priyavrata is told. That you, Priyavrata is the other son of Swayambhu Manu. And he is told, you please become the king. And Swayambhu Manu has actually already, he had gone to the forest as a brahmachari, as a renunciate. And his plan was that he wanted to live as a brahmachari and take sannyas eventually and then become liberated from material existence. So for this purpose, when he was acting at that time, he was under the guidance of Narad Muni and he would renounce the world more or less. So at that time, Swayambhu Manu came to him and told him that there is no one to rule the kingdom. Please come back and take the responsibility of ruling. So Priyavrata was extremely reluctant. He said, I have saved myself from entanglement in this world. I don't want to become entangled now. So then when he said this, at that time, Swayambhu Manu became disturbed. So we see Priyavrata, he was caught between the two. Narada Muni was telling him, don't want to get entangled. Narada Muni, see, he preaches so powerfully that he gets people disentangled from material existence by his strong instructions. So now both of them are Mahajanas. Swayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapilo Manu. So Manu is also Mahajan. Narada is also Mahajan. So what to do? Priyavrata was in a dilemma. But he was... So when two authorities are saying the same thing, then what should one do? He wanted to continue what he was doing. So seeing the grave need in the world for a competent administrator, Brahmaji himself defended his swan career. And Brahmaji told him that actually don't resent the order that the Lord has given you. Don't be envious of the Supreme Lord. Whatever he wants, you should do. That is the meaning of being a servant. And he told him at that time that if somebody is not attached, somebody is attached, then even if that person goes lives in the forest, that person is living with six wives. The six wives, the five senses in the mind, they are themselves six wives. And one is staying with the six wives, one will be bound. One will simply be a hypocrite and one will stay in bondage because of contemplating the sense objects. On the other hand, if one is self-controlled, one is detached, then even if one stays at home and has other wives also, one will not become bound. Therefore, because the service is required, please accept it. So he accepted it eventually. Why did he accept? Because he thought and he felt this is the best way. The Lord is asking me to serve him. And Brahmaji himself has come. So Brahmaji is the spiritual superior and teacher of both Swayambhu Manu and Narad Muni. He is like the spiritual master for both of them. So when Brahmaji came and gave a decision, both the disciples, they agreed. Now it seems that Swayambhu Manu won and Narad Muni lost. But Swayambhu Manu did not gloat in his glory, looking down at Narad Muni. And Narad Muni also accepted what was the will of his superior, that is Brahmaji. So there the point is that he said there also the similar words are used. And the point is if one is not attached, then even if one stays at home, stays in family, stays in a palace, still that person will not become bound, even if that person is a king. So when will that happen? Kurvan api nalipyate. One is yoga yukta vishuddhatma vijitatma jitendriya. So one who is purified, Jitatma is purified. Jitendriya is one. Jitatma and Jitendriya is one is control the mind, control the senses. So one who has done this will stay liberated no matter what happens. Kurvan apinalipete. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains. So if he says that Prabhupada's purport goes into the point of Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma. Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma means what? The person is compassionate to all living beings. Prabhupada translated it, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. So the other's Atma becomes like his Atma. I mean, he treats others so lovingly that other's Atma becomes like his Atma. This doesn't mean that they all become an impersonal one. It simply indicates that there's a deep emotional connection that comes about that almost makes the feeling to be like oneness. So, we'll discuss about this in Atma Upami and Sarvatra in 6.31. 32 in 6.32, we'll discuss it more. But at this stage, the point is, Krishna is talking at this level that he is assuring Arjuna that Arjuna will stay free from bondage if he acts in this way. Yukto yoga yukto vishuddhatma vishuddhatma jitendriya. And such a person becomes dear to everyone because that person has no selfish motivation. That person doesn't want anything from anyone. That person simply wants to serve. Now there can be various definitions of material and spiritual. You know, how do we know whether our relationship is material or spiritual? We can start with selfish and selfless. When we meet someone, if I think, what can this person do for me? Then my relationship is selfish. If I meet someone and think, what can I do for that person? Then that person is selfless. And if we deepen this and connect this with Krishna, then what can I get, what can this person give me for sense enjoyment? Then I am thinking materially. I think, oh, how can this person bless me with advancement in Krishna consciousness? Maybe I please this person by going and talking respectfully, attentively, or by hearing the classes that this person gave, or by associating with this person, asking questions and hearing to discussions attentively and submissively, whatever way is possible. You get that association and you make spiritual advancement by that. Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma. A devotee is the well-wisher of all living beings. A devotee is selfless for oneself and selfless for the sake of others. For the sake of others means that the devotee is concerned about others. Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma Kurvan Apinalipyate. The person, even if acts, the person doesn't become bound. Let's continue our discussion in the next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.